All right, about one more minute. If you don't know, just skip it.
For all of it? The quiz and the personal?
Yeah. Skip the whole quiz. So.
Yeah. Wait, what personal? Is that questions too?
So, yeah, I meant to say this. I handed my masters out, which were only one-sided. If you only have one printing on one side of your exam...
I have one side of this.
That's fine. No, that's right. Somewhere out there, there's an exam that only has printing on one side. And maybe the back page and the front. Oh, we got what?
This, no, but this is an unused one.
Oh, okay. Is it right here?
So you only got one.
No, no, I got one. I'm sorry. Good.
I'll put this here for anybody.
No,
yeah.
Wait, the answers were going to be on one of these?
I didn't mean the key. I meant I had to print one-sided and then put it back through to get two-sided. So. And I handed the one-sided ones out. So they're somewhere. In fact, there's a $5 bill taped to the back side.
Check your seat.
Check on your seat. You say that funny. We had a guy at Bell South that was writing documentation. He put it, if anybody reads this, I'll buy him a cup of coffee.
Is that right?
And
nobody.
Nobody. Yeah.
We turned in documents to the government, you know, way on the back page, and we'll say, go to dogs or something. Yeah, I didn't say that or something. Go Jackets. All right, let's go through these. I think, so, you know, some of these questions I think I should have probably edited them a little bit. They come from, I edited some, but some are left from our last time we taught it. And I wish I'd gone back and tried to put in more things that we emphasized and maybe take out some things that we didn't. But it's okay. That's my fault. So let's go through these quick. Let's do the chapter summaries. I'll start with 1 Timothy 1. We don't even necessarily need it. 1.
Intentional
2. Men and women. 3.
Elders.
4.
False and true.
False and true teachers. Now it comes in the verses there. 5.
Others.
Widows and others. 6.
Word rich.
Yes. 2 Timothy 1. Not afraid or ashamed. 2.
Images.
3. Perilous times or fierce or evil, whatever times. And, you know, obviously that's the first part. You know, when you summarize in 3 words, you're going to miss a little content, you know, but anyway. 4.
Final charge.
Yes, right. Which is what? What 3 words kind of centerpiece of that whole second half of the second
thing?
Preach the word. I think everything points to that, and everything after it points back to it. All right. What are the 3 themes of 1 and 2 Timothy together? The 3 themes of those 2 together.
Fulfill your commission.
Yep. Fulfill your commission. Do your job.
Depend on the word.
Yep. Yep.
Expect evil.
Right. And you can see how all those are related to each other, right? What is his commission? Well, it's to address evil, right? You know, so... And what's your tool for doing that? Well, so those are all connected. And then maybe a 4th theme kind of pervading 1 Timothy. How does the church operate? And that'll lead us to our essay question. All right, let's see if we can get these chapters. If a man doesn't know how to rule his house, how will he take care of the church of God? Related to what?
Elder
qualifications. Athletics and so on. What would that be? 2 Timothy, right. I suffer these things, but I'm not ashamed. I know whom I have believed and so on. Godliness with contentment is great gain. 1:6, and that's in the context of rich and poor. Poor and rich, sorry. No one despise your youth. Be an example in word, conduct, love, purity, faith, and all that.
1:4.
Yeah, how did you arrive at that? Because that one's kind of I've kind of put that one in just to see about it. Is it related to, what's the title of that chapter? 1 Timothy 4. False and true teachers. And here, I think, you know, Paul begins by saying this is how terrible the teachers will be and what they'll say. And he says, but then he goes on and talks about a whole bunch of things. About being an example, let no one despise your youth, fan the flame, you know, your gift, and all that. So that fits the theme. 2 Timothy, evil men and imposters.
3.
Yeah, perilous time. In great house, vessels of gold.
2.
Singing to do the image. Adam was not deceived, but the woman.
1
Timothy 2. Preach the word.
4.
Singing to be 4. if anyone doesn't provide for his own,
1:5
every, because it relates to the widows, right? Or widows and others. Every creature is of God is good. Nothing is to be refused. How'd you get 1:4 from that?
People will say you can't do this.
Yeah, those are one of the two false teachings about marriage and denying meats and others. And Paul answered, command those who are rich, 1:6 I urge you to went to Macedonia, remain in Ephesus to charge some to teach another doctrine. Yeah, that's the initial charge. Although the charge here is again. All right, let's try to do these facts quickly. Hometown. What chapter first went with Paul?
Journey 2.
Yeah, but what chapter is that? What did he recruit him? That's correct, it is the second journey. Perhaps a replacement for the youthful John Mark, who was not wrong. You can guess.
I put 14.
14 is where Paul first goes to Lystra and is stoned and left for dead. 16 is where he comes back and Timothy is well reported. Do you get it? 17 is where he gets the challenging assignment to go back to Thessalonica and confirm the brethren. So that's important. And then 19 is about the church at Ephesus. Okay. What approximate age of the church?
40?
Yeah. I would say 10 to 12, but who knows? But yeah. And of course, it could be a year or two between the two letters. So anyway, mid-50s for the establishment or first visit, let's just say second journey, into the second journey, and then mid-60s for Paul's imprisonment, second journey. Timothy's mother and grandmother? Whichever is which, I don't know. That's why I put it this way. Two prayer characteristics of a good prayer giver?
Holy hands and the wrath?
Yes, holy hands, which I think is personal purity, and then there's also the relationship thing. And I don't know, we didn't talk too much about it, but it seemed like if you've had a fight with somebody and then they leave a prayer, it's kind of hard. Anyway, without wrath and disputing. Let's see. What is the reason for these prayers?
Peaceful.
They're praying for rulers and all authorities that we can live a peaceful, quiet life. Good. Women are to dress according to what pattern?
Godliness.
Which is kind of a theme in some of these. That's an interesting word, which doesn't have the word God in it in Greek. What are other terms for elder?
Bishop.
Yes, and bishop is actually, elder is used in 1 Timothy 5, but bishop is used in 1 Timothy 3, and that kind of confuses some people. If a man desire an office of a bishop, and that's a ruler or overseer, right, which is the episkopos, right, epi over and scopo, looking overseer, whereas in 5 it's presbyteros, which is an older man. We saw that in, when he says older men and older women in the first part of 1 Timothy. Let's see, purpose of 1 Timothy. According to chapter 3, I write you these things so that
you know how to conduct.
Yeah, there's. Does it seem like Paul is directing the affairs of the church in that text? Why is he writing Timothy? Is it so Timothy will lead the church, or so the church should operate? Well, that was an open question. We'll talk about that. Let's see. I forget where I am. Two specific false teachings there in 1 Timothy 4. Marriage and meats. And what other chapter is kind of similar? We said, to me, it always helps to link them together. 2:3, right? 2 Timothy 2. 2 Timothy 3. Three characteristics of a good servant. And this one, actually, the answer is on the front page. Be an example in, you know, word and life.
Love, spirit.
Love, faith, spirit, and something else. Long suffering, purity, or something else. Anyway, any of those three would work. Or just remember that that's the verse. 1 Timothy 5, who's worse than an unbeliever? What are three qualifications of a widow indeed among many? Age, over 60, what else?
Washington.
Yes. And then the other negative is she doesn't have someone else who could do that. That might be considered a qualification, among others. It's hospitality. What circumstances is Paul in, 2 Timothy? Why is he not ashamed? All right.
That's how I know that.
List at least three images of service. Soldier, athlete, farmer, there are other vessels, workmen, and servant. Then three qualities of a good servant. And that's from 2 Timothy 2. You get to the bottom. For the Lord's servant must not strive, be gentle to all. Those are a few. I can't remember the rest. But, yeah, those are things we probably didn't emphasize. We were trying to learn those, but that's okay. 3 of 19 characteristics of perilous times. And I almost put on that question that have to do with love. That's a good one.
Lovers of pleasure.
Yes, really, yeah.
Lovers of money?
I think so, yes. Lovers of silver, actually, if I remember in the Greek. And the other one is they were without natural affection. And that's a storge word, but it has to do with love. So those are interesting out of the 19. Plenty of others. You could almost name a bad thing and you wouldn't be wrong. Who are Jannes and Jambres? In Jewish tradition, at least. But the point is that they thrived briefly, and then after that, their folly was made known to all. Four ways the word is profitable.
Doctrine.
Profitable for doctrine, or reproof, for correction, instruction. Many of us memorized that as a child. Four major duties of evangelists. Preach the word. Be ready in season, out of season. What? Reprove, rebuke, and exhort with all long-suffering and teaching. Those are the acceptable answers. What are two things that Paul compares at the end, 2 Timothy 4, his Christian life to? Two images he uses.
Fighter and fighter.
Right. That's right. Okay. I wanted to spend some time, because I said you would. Just exchange these around. You can pass them around and just kind of take a look. These are the papers I've gotten. And you can take a look at these and just exchange them, you know, circulate them around. Just take a look at them and see if you see some key points. But let's talk about this business. And actually, my authors are not here except for Philip. Let's see. Nate and Danny.
I'd rather read Nate's.
And Danny's, and this is neither praise nor criticism, is 8 pages. But he actually does a good job in the very beginning to summarize it. So I'll just show you the way he approached it, which I thought was good and interesting. Sorry, that was mine.
And when is he defending his dissertation?
Yeah. So here's what Danny did. You can't see what I'm seeing. Okay. This is going to be hard to do. So this is his, and what he did is he took this write up. You remember? You saw this was kind of like the thesis to defend, mm-hmm.
right?
And I'll just read. So what I did in this, I just put a little paragraph for every kind of argument that I would make from 1st, 2nd Timothy to defend this position. The position, if you weren't here at the beginning, was Timothy is the example of really our modern pastor system, where there's a single man who is in charge of the church, much like the president of the United States or the CEO of a corporation or whatever. And that's just the way things have always been organized in all of humankind. That's not in here, I made that up. But anyway, in that model, Paul kind of puts Timothy in place to be the kind of the pastor, meaning shepherd of the whole group. Now, there may be elders under him as a council of advisors, kind of like a board of directors or maybe a cabinet or something. But anyway, here are the arguments. If you look, Timothy is in Ephesus. He's told to stay there by Paul to stop false teaching, help the church carry out its missions and functions, 1 Timothy 3:14-15, to give charges and commands. You see that in the text? Charge the brethren, do this. So there's a clear authority that's indicated there. He was supposed to select and appoint the elders. Why were those qualifications given to him? If not, you know, so he was supposed to be able to lay hands on them, but not hastily, right? Not be a sheriff. So those are suggesting his authority to appoint his subordinate leaders. And they're subordinate, right? Because he appoints them. Not only that, he determines if they should be supported or not and how much, right? Worthy of double honor or not. He's told how the money would be used toward the widows in chapter 5, who's deserving of support, and others he should refuse. Refuse, that's kind of in there. He was to collect or defend the elders. He was to be the the judicial authority for accusations against the elders, right? 1 Timothy 5. Y'all see those arguments there? You see that in the text? You see how you can come to that conclusion? Okay. So, I'm just kind of go through. I might actually just read Nate's out loud, but if you can find it, whoever has it. You, by the way, you're not supposed to hold on to those. Just kind of pass them around and look at them. So here's what Danny did, and I think we can kind of get his point. He actually stopped. So here's what he did. He said, here are the arguments out of that. And so he listed those, right? Paul appointed Timothy to do these authoritative things. Let's see if I can... oops, too far. Issue commands, example 3. So he just pulled each of these out. And then he actually has a fairly decent summary of, but I'm not too good. I was hoping he would be here to kind of summarize what he was doing, but he didn't. I'm sorry. I'm no good at this.
So did he go through and write a paragraph on
he
each
did.
Example?
Yeah, not a, just a paragraph. It was pages and quotations from commentaries. You'll see it when you come around.
Yeah, here.
So in each case, and really a lot of sort of graphics and footnotes and things like that, looking at some of the Greek words to kind of show how each of those were not right. But I was thinking, I thought I saw last night that he had a kind of a summary here. Let me go down and see. Yeah, so he talks about the definitions of the words. Here's the way they think, way things were in the New Testament, kind of an overview, plurality of elders. And, yeah, so here are the words. The elders were pastors. So this is a pretty good picture of what the rest of the New Testament says elders were, a plurality, they ruled. And so you'd have to kind of go against that model to take this interpretation. Timothy, I think that was his point. Uh-oh, I'm out of memory in PDF. Danny, you ran me out of memory. Okay, well, that's not good. So, if somebody has it.
I got it here.
Okay, you can take a look at that. Let me bring up another one. So,
it's the chart.
Yeah, that's what it is. So, I don't know why PDF talks so much memory on my machine.
I thought
there was. Let me find Nate's here. Okay, so this is Nate's. It's a more brief and Nate kind of addressed what's the heart of the issue here? I mean, if you kind of distill it, all 5 or 6 examples that I gave you, what's the heart of it? Could you distill all of those to have a common issue? Yeah. I mean, that's kind of getting at it, right? You see, the issue is not how do elders get appointed. That's just an example. How does money get spent by the church? That's just an example. How do accusations against elders? You know, the question is, what is Timothy in the middle of all of that? I think that's the heart of the issue. What's his role? Is he an example that's binding today, that we should have Timothys in every church? Is that the best? Or does he have some special role because of his relationship with Paul the Apostle or not?
Or is this defining the role of a preacher?
That's right. It's one of those two. It seems to me, y'all see that's the issue? And that is, are we still trying to look for this one man, single authority? Or is there something different that makes that role that Timothy had not really a binding, consistent, even feasible example today? You see that? That's kind of the heart of the issue, I think. Maybe you don't agree with that. So my question would be, what would arguments be that would say that, yes, Timothy was in a kind of a special role, which would be impossible to recreate today?
Well, yeah, being specifically charged by an apostle, they'd have delegated authority
right.
from an apostle.
Now, why is that not possible today? Right? Yeah, it's pretty obvious. No, there are no apostles to do that. And to whatever extent Paul was telling him stuff as a kind of a way to guide it, are those same kind of telling him stuff available today to everyone? Not just Timothy, in any special way. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So you can quibble about whether the instructions, which is what I did, in my little write-up, about whether he was really supposed to guard the budget against widows who were not widows indeed, if that was his role, or if he was really supposed to be the guy who was protecting the elders and nobody else was doing that, or he was supposed to personally appoint them and select them, which is not what it says. Even Titus is not told to select them. He's told to appoint elders in every place. Even Paul himself appointed elders. He didn't select them. That's maybe a technicality, but if you look in Acts 17, the first illustration of churches, elders appointed there, he appointed them, which I think he meant, he said, here's the qualifications, people, find these men, and he appointed them. I think we're quoting that process. But that's quibbling, it seems to me. I think it's valid. But the real issue is, was Timothy in a special place or not? I think that's the heart of the issue. Do you agree with that? So let's try to read this. This is what Nate says. If Timothy's role in the early church is best understood as that of an itinerant apostolic representative, though his titles include evangelist, preacher, teacher, servant, and who had a ministry or diaconos, a service. Y'all know that. Okay. There's some Nateisms in here, but it's okay. I think he nailed the issue. So, unique selection and role of the 12. And who are the 12? Are they called the 12?
Yes.
Yeah, they are. John 6, Jesus turns to the 12. Which, interestingly, in John has never identified the 12 at that point in the book. It's almost understood that the readers know who the 12 are when they get to chapter 6. Doesn't show the selection, but he turns to the 12. The apostles, the 12, John 6, were specifically chosen by Christ to be witnesses to preach, and it's important that they had been with Jesus from the time of his baptism through his ascension. Y'all remember all that, right? They had unique power, authority, commissioned to be witnesses of all they had seen and heard, to teach all that Jesus had commanded, great commission. Paul was called to be an apostle like the 12 out of due time, and was given authority, verse, and authority extended to questions of doctrine and congregational operation. In the case of Timothy, he is called an apostle. Does that bother you?
No.
You aware of that? Why is that?
He's a messenger.
Yeah, and so is Barnabas, as a matter of fact, when he's with Paul, right? They're messengers of the church, or Timothy's a messenger of Paul, as is Barnabas. But based on the criteria laid out in Mark 3 and Acts 1, Timothy's apostleship, it can't be the same as that of the 12. It just can't be. He's an apostle in the sense that he's sent forth with a message, but not in the sense he's received his commission directly from the risen Lord. See that? Note also Barnabas' similarities. So what he's doing here is saying, okay, apostles are really special. Timothy was not one, so let's rule that out as far as authority. Timothy worked with, was under the direction of Paul. He's a co-author in the introduction of 6 of Paul's letters. I didn't really realize that. As Paul went on his journey, sometimes he was sent ahead, sometimes he was left behind. And by the way, that's a pretty strong point. You look at the book of Acts and also in other letters, Corinthians, I think, in particular Philippians, mention Timothy's just being sent hither and thither by Paul. That's a very important element of the argument, I think. Sometimes he was sent to cities where Paul had previously been. So here's some things about Timothy. Here are just examples. Left behind in Macedonia and Corinth, returned, sent to Philippi, Thessalonica, to Ephesus, and then told to preach at the end of Paul's life. In every case, he was to preach and teach what Paul had taught him, preach and teach. Any authority exercised by Timothy was exercised on behalf of Paul, who, as an apostle, had every right to exercise authority. That's the apostle thing, right? Biblically speaking, the people responsible for shepherding and pastoring, and then he goes into what the definition of the elders were. There was always more than one, right? Okay, so any apostle, 12 apostles, would necessarily have authority over any group of elders because of their inspiration, unique nature of their commission. Someone standing as an apostolic representative to tell a church what he'd been told to do, had been told to tell them by an apostle, would not be exercising authority on his own behalf and on the behalf of the particular apostle. That's the key sentence right there. There wasn't a written word. Well, I say that. What's 1 and 2 Timothy? It's actually the written word from the apostle, which Timothy now has as evidence of his authority given to him by Paul. And the whole idea of a commission personally to Timothy was Paul telling Timothy, do this, and really on my behalf. And I think that's the key thing. Anyway, so given the above, it's impossible that the role of apostolic representative would exist as such today, which is why we're given elders, sober-minded men, possessed of the same scripture, now available to anyone, we're told to lead as servants by example until the chief shepherd, singular, appears, and so on. So anyway, you kind of get the idea there. His argument is that there was a special time in this place, And I think Danny adds to that, that if you look at all the other Bible teaching about elders, and there's a significant amount in Acts, in 1 Peter 5, in Hebrews, it doesn't describe a hierarchy of a man and other. How do you reconcile that with the letters to 1 Timothy, which kind of does hint at that, right? And the answer is this. This is the answer. Timothy had a special apostolic connection and authority in the church where he was. Philip, you want to say anything more about your write-up or that this struck you thinking about it?
I love this approach. That's not, you know, that I love that. One of my things that I thought was significant that's maybe not in Nate's is that he was setting these other people within the church for his absence. That Paul was saying, Timothy, leave. Like, they'll be fine. You come check in on me. Bring me my coat. Bring me my parchments.
Oh, that's like, interesting.
My very first line there.
Yeah.
Groups of servants will care for the spiritual disabilities even in his absence. So,
right.
If so it was all about him, then
he was the centerpiece of the church and the rubber pin, the wheels fall off if he leaves. Yeah.
But right. It should never be based around him.
Right. Some have made a big deal about the fact that he laid hands on some the elders in 1 Timothy 5. I'm not sure that's directed to Timothy personally, like lay hands hastily on no man.
Or that it's the same type of lay.
Well, that's right. So remember, there are three laying on of hands that are mentioned in these two letters. Right. And so in another place it says, don't neglect the gift, which was given you by the laying on the hands of the... So who's in charge? Does laying on of hands mean I'm in charge of you? Well, if you lay it back to me, okay, now what do we do, you know? You remember the church laid their hands on Paul and Barnabas, I believe, before the first journey. Was that some evidence of authority over them, or just a, you know, fellowship, or an acknowledgement of their role and their responsibility? I think that's what that means. Yeah, and then Paul laid his hands on Timothy too. So
I thought we were supposed to keep our answers only to scriptures within these two books.
Well, that's good.
So this idea that there was overlap in their mutual purpose. That,
where's that?
The very last paragraph.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Yeah. So, a healthy eldership rejoices in the work of a knowledgeable, dedicated evangelist. Elders and evangelists rightly acknowledge overlap in responsibilities, protecting false teachers, directing towards proper conduct, rebuking sin. Like, there's mutual purpose, but not conflicting role.
Okay, good.
I think that's an interpretation approach.
So that addresses a different issue, and that is, okay, suppose there is an evangelist located, supported even by a local church. What's the relationship? What is the relationship then? I don't even think I would put Timothy in that category. And that's your first point. He could disappear any day. That's kind of important, right? So he wasn't like the guy.
Well, when he says, do the work of an evangelist, he foresees someone in Timothy's roles working alongside the
with elders. I think so too. And I do think that in that overlap area, there are things like, maybe he is the arbiter of accusations. Maybe he is the one who ensures the church follows the example of choosing qualified men by teaching them about qualifications, for example, and by actually maybe overseeing some appointment process. But that doesn't mean there's a hierarchy of authority in government. That's not what I see. I also don't find the rule. The word rule in Hebrews 13 is the word for hegemony, you know, in the English. You know what a hegemony is? It's like a nation that it has like control of other nations or something. That's the hegemony, or whatever it is the word for elders. It's an authoritative rule. It's a word that the Septuagint uses to describe Joseph, who was second in command in Egypt, for example, in Stephen's sermon. So it's a very authoritative word. People don't like to think of it that way, but it is. So that's not really ever said about evangelists and all this kind of thing. So Philip's point about, well, then how do they work together? Well, they overlap in what they do, but there may be some intersection with regard to protection from accusation, helping the church select good men, that kind of thing.
Titus
set things in order, I think, with your fault. Sorry, I didn't finish that.
I kind of pulled back, looked at a bird's eye view of the situation and the time that it was. Without these instructions right here, you could go and appoint elders and then leave them hanging and wonder how they're going to make decisions under what, you know, criteria will do. But instead, it was real specific and stuff, and so they're kind of laying the groundwork for what's going to happen in the future.
I think we have to see these letters at the tail end of the apostolic era, if you want to call it that, where Revelation was not yet complete, but it was almost. And we're watching it actually becoming complete. And why is he writing this letter, by the way, 1 Timothy 3? I'm writing you this stuff, so you'll know how to behave, so you'll govern affairs in the church. Now, once Timothy goes off to Rome to take care of Paul in his last days, what's the church going to do? I guess he's not going to take the letter with him. He might leave it there for them. And it's what we were saying before about, in fact, even found the verse in chapter 3, seems to indicate Timothy knew all this already. And besides a reminder and an encouragement and all that, it clearly was authoritative writing that would actually inform that church and other churches since. I think that's the case, isn't it?
And 1 Peter 5 is interesting. I think you referenced it. The only hierarchy mentioned there is perfect. Shepherd, yeah. Shepherd, yeah. Chief Shepherd.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's right.
Christ. Peter,
I think he entered this whole thing with a dilemma. How could these two letters be describing one model of pastorship and all the rest of the... And that's Danny's point, by the way. Read all those pages, all it's saying, that's just not the way it was. So how do you reconcile that? Well, I think Nate's saying, well, it was a special time. And Philip's saying, well, actually, he could believe any day, and it would be fine. That's, yeah, so good points. So that was I enjoyed
it. I'll say one more thing is that I put in the email, but not in the doc, that there's a convenience factor of the pastoral model that we see so often today that we need to be ready to answer that, because it is so nice to just go, oh, well, this is whatever that guy says.
Right.
And so many things in the Old Testament show us that the convenient way of organizing, like Jeroboam, is to say, hey, just worship right here. It's so convenient. The convenient way is almost never the right way.
And I would say more than convenient, the kind of the accepted socially, everybody gets it. Yeah, you got to have a charismatic center, or how do you ever get people going, you know, and that kind of thing.
Just to speak to Nate's comments too, I think there are some, you know, churches today that, you know, organize around what they call like apostles.
Well, yeah, that's right. They've tried to recreate that. That's good.
That they have like an apostle that like rules the whole thing, and that there are representatives of that apostle.
I think he kind of pre-answered that by saying, "How do you become one of the 12, and why aren't they around today?"
Exactly. Yeah.
Take a look at this. This is the story of my life. Is when I try to make applications, I never have time. Look at the other one study sheet that you got. The goal of this class was not to memorize Timothy's hometown or the chapter titles. The goal of the class was to be different at the end. And so, remember our themes. I think somewhere in here, actually, was going to bring them up and show them. Our themes are not just themes about the book, but they were also goals of the course, and here's what they were. And you can see the themes embedded in these. But I've suggested an exercise to pick one of these themes. Commit to your responsibility. And I've tried to suggest very pragmatic steps you can take. Write down on a piece of paper two or three of the major responsibilities you have in your life, right? That you've taken on or just fallen into, either way. List the gifts that you have. I hope this you can hear some of the language here that you should be developing. What are the difficulties? Expect evil. That helps keep you from doing that in your life. It could be evil, it could just be difficulties. And then how would you prepare to overcome that? And then, all four of these end with this thing. What can you do during this week, right now, this week, as a first step toward changing something in your life, that would relate to these goals? The second has to do with being better in our handling. The third is being better in our handling of the word. What's a weakness? What's a strength? How do you develop those? The second has to do with responding to evil. And maybe if there's a case there where you actually identify your Alexander the coppersmith who did you much harm and figure out how to deal with that. Either overcome the effects in your life or even reconcile something. And then I think for maybe all of us really, we're all older than somebody, but maybe what are we doing to prepare others? Pick somebody and do something. Okay, see how I abbreviated the main point of the whole class? If you're not different, what have we done? We haven't changed our lives. So. Okay.